Hi, it's Grace, and this is a special series of Frogmore Stew called Meal Prep. The politicians that run our state government are essentially the ingredients that make up the stew that is our state. And by getting to know each of the folks running for state house and state senate, we hope to offer you a window into what we as the voters will determine the final recipe to be. Caitlin, TJ, and I took on the task of interviewing as many of the people running for those seats as we could. The interviews offer us a more personal look at the variety of people who want us to send them to Columbia. We learned a lot. We hope you do too.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Today, we're joined by Matt Valardebo, who is running for the South Carolina House of Representatives District 26. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Caitlin. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us. So District 26, that's Fort Mill area, right? Like it's a little like a triangle looking district.
Yes, it is. It is everything that we call Fort Mill proper, which would be the 29715 zip code. So that is everything east of Interstate 77.
Okay, got it. And the incumbent, Representative Ray Felder, who is a Republican, assumed office in 2012 and is not running for re-election. Is that correct?
Correct.
Two Republicans are running in the primary, Elizabeth Enns and David Martin. You are not being primaried, and you also have a individual by the name of Kirill Mace, who's running for the Workers' Party.
Yes.
Awesome. So this isn't the first time you've run. You ran against Representative Felder before. Tell us what has you inspired, because Representative Felder won with about 4,000 more votes than you did last time.
Yes. Representative Felder has held that seat for soon to be 12 years, and she's popular. And typically, she's won all her elections in the general election by a similar margin. When I heard she was retiring, I knew that would be a great opportunity to use my experience within the community, having run for office in this area. This is actually my third time running for office, my second for this particular House seat. I knew I could use the goodwill I had built and the reputation I had built in those efforts to win this election, actually. The two Republicans are going to be in a primary, and they're already ramping up the sort of negative rhetoric that turns people off to politics. And I think that'll definitely help to push people my way with my campaign of positivity and inclusion.
I love that. So you are originally from Florida. Tell us what you feel like you've done in your life to prepare you to be a state legislator.
Some people that have known me for a long time would probably tell you I was born to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that way. I really got the political bug, believe it or not, through music. I was a big Public Enemy fan as a teenager, and so that got me reading books about subject matter that suburban white kids didn't typically read about in the 70s and 80s. So then as I got older, music again led me on a path. I was massive into Rage Against the Machine, and they actually put reading lists on their liner notes in their CD, and I like started reading those books they were recommending. So that led to me getting a political science degree and maybe with some hopes of being a lawyer or something. Needless to say, I moved back home and resumed my career in maintenance and engineering. But I always stayed active in Florida, volunteering for Vice President Gore and volunteering for various gubernatorial candidates, Democratic gubernatorial candidates over the year. And I just studied and learned and watched and observed. So when I moved up here, I ended up just studying this area and seeing things that just didn't make sense. There's a lot of money in this area and a lot of development, but there's a lot of important things that are being neglected. Important money can fix it kind of things, like no sidewalks and bad roads.
And so, Matt, what do you think the biggest issue is in your district?
I would say, based on my interaction with voters, it would be the failing infrastructure. We're dealing with some of the worst roads in the country in this area, where you're seeing almost daily water main breaks. We need like long-term solutions to these ever-present problems instead of just these minor, let's go put out a campfire solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think that is what translates to the biggest issue statewide, or is there another issue you
no.
think takes
I would say statewide, people are concerned about the assault on bodily autonomy and women's access to healthcare. I would say statewide, people are worried about the state of our public education. The numbers keep getting worse, no matter what the current party in power, now 20 years into their near total control of the state's political structure, we just keep getting bad, and the teacher shortage crisis just keeps worsening. So I would say those are the kind of issues, along with infrastructure, that translate more statewide.
Got it. And so if you are elected and you show up for your first day and have a magic wand, what is the one policy you'd change that day?
I'm just going to throw like a blanket over it. All these legislative obstacles to like allowing people to take control of their freedom and liberty. The teachers can't form unions. There's legislative obstacles there. There can't be citizen ballot initiatives. There's legislative obstacles there. And I think if you were to make government that is actually for the people, allow people to put things on the ballot that a lot of these politicians count on not being put on the ballot, you would see a sharp change in the state. You would see us moving more towards like modernity, I would call it.
Okay. And so then talk to me about jobs. Manufacturing jobs in particular have been pretty popular here in South Carolina. We've given a lot of tax credits to some larger companies. How important do you think it is to attract companies with not just manufacturing jobs, but also gray and white collar jobs?
I think certainly we need to bring people to the state that'll make it better. And ensuring that we have like quality jobs for people to come to, no matter what collar they wear, is critical. The way the governor handles things and the GOP supports these sweetheart deals, the sort of skirting of a real traffic impact assessment, these companies should be invested partners in our community. And many of them are, don't get me wrong, but we're in a situation with a lot of these companies where they're not holding up their end of the deal and they're just making money hand over fist here. The state is very anti-union, which is not a good thing. I feel if our workers were better represented with a labor union, we would see like the good paying kind of jobs the state needs with the real benefits and job security that organized labor brings.
I like that answer. Okay. And so we talked a little bit about infrastructure in terms of your district. I think we've heard a resounding yes on the need for infrastructure improvements with most of the candidates we've spoken with. And so my question is a little bit more tactical. Yes, we want better roads, but how do we ensure that is what ends up happening? It seems 26, for instance, it's being widened from here to Columbia, but it's going to take us 10 years to do it. How do we improve this infrastructure situation we're in?
So I can tell you that the SCDOT is not the shining temple on the mountain of America's state Department of Transportation. It is very inefficient. One just needs to look up to I-85 between Gastonia and Greenville, or from the state line of South Carolina all the way to the state line of Georgia almost. It's been in constant construction, and it doesn't seem to ever be finishing anytime soon. The way things are done here is weird. As far as the DOT goes, the execution could be there, but we need people who are committed to making these real changes within our system, within the DOT specifically, that would streamline us and make us an efficient sort of model for how we can get these big capital projects taken care of, shifting that work schedule. These guys should be working at night when everybody's home sleeping. When there's less cars on the road, it's a less impact on our citizenry to shut these interstates and roads down, and things will move quicker in the evening hours. It's cooler, and it's proven to be safer. We need to incentivize how we do these large projects. Other states will grant millions of dollars in bonus money to these companies that complete these projects in advance. And it tends to end up working that way when you incentivize it. We need to be fining these companies that drag these projects out in perpetuity. There needs to be a real cleanup and a real accountability for the sort of mismanagement of the way we do things as far as these large-scale road projects.
All right, we're going to move into a lightning round, and we're going to do a 1 out of 10 scale. 1 is if you fully disagree, and 10 is if you fully agree.
All right.
Heartbeat bill or 6-week abortion ban?
I'm a 1.
School vouchers for all?
1.
Open carry law?
1.
Transgender care banned for minors?
1.
Critical race theory in schools?
Oh boy, I don't know how to answer that because that's very vague. I don't think there's a problem with that in schools, but it's not there. So it's like, how do you answer a question to something that doesn't exist?
Social emotional learning in schools?
I'm a 10.
Term limits for state house and state senate?
10.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives?
In honor of Spinal Tap, I'm an 11 on that one.
How judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
1.
Okay. And what about lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
1.
One last question for you, Matt. If your constituents are listening to this episode today, what do you want them to know about you? What is the one takeaway that you want them to know?
Some friends of mine were talking about it on another podcast the other day. It isn't that I'm some sort of ideologue spouting Democrat, Democrat, Democrat. I'm a well-reasoned, thought-out man who has applied things like logic and root cause analysis to how I form my opinions. So I would say it's more that it doesn't make sense that there's zero balance in our state government. It doesn't make sense that we're not getting substantive things accomplished with our state government and our elected officials at the state level. We need to bring some balance to things and accountability. And the only way that happens is by electing more Democrats. The Republicans have had this 20-year hold on the state, and they've basically bumbled it. When I say these things, it isn't about hyperpartisanship. It's about the facts and how we got to where we're at today.
We're here today with Blake Sanders. He is running in the Republican primary for House District 9. Blake, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Thank you very much for having me.
I think your district is in the upstate. Is that right, Anderson?
It is. It's in Anderson County, and it includes the cities or towns of Pelzer, West Pelzer, Williamston, and it runs along the Highway 29 and Midway Road corridor to Anderson University and includes parts of the city of Anderson as well. I'm not 100% certain of this, but I think it's one of the few House districts that has 4 municipalities. Urban sprawl, urban growth, working with city and local governments is very critical to District 9.
You are running for a seat that has been held by Ann Thayer since 2010, and she's not running again. And there are 2 other people in the primary along with you?
Yes, there are 2 others that are running for this seat. And I was blessed to have known Ann. I started in elected office in 2011, blessed to get to work with Ann for 8 years as mayor, get to learn the ins and outs of how the General Assembly works and specifically the House. And I consider Ann and her husband Mark great friends.
That district is a pretty solid Republican district. There are no Democrats running in this race. So essentially, whoever wins this primary is who will win the seat. So the primary is essentially the election for District 9, right?
That is correct. 611, that's what I keep telling everybody.
Can you tell us about your job and what you feel has prepared you to take on the seat?
Absolutely. Clemson graduate 2006 in landscape architecture. I worked for national and international firms. I was fortunate to work in 48 states. The 2 that will not, Hawaii and Alaska, I do not know why they won't hire me to come do any work. But in 2017, my wife said, look, I watch all these YouTube videos about you saying that you're a husband and father first and that family means most and that people matter and that you create places for people. But you travel a lot. And so in 2017, I created a company called Studio Maine so that I could focus from Louisiana to DC and specifically focus in South Carolina. And so in South Carolina, obviously there are 46 counties, 271 municipalities, 200 of which are under 5,000 people. And so Studio Main provides strategic planning, master planning, downtown planning, infrastructure plans for those communities that are under 5,000 people that traditionally or historically couldn't afford to hire a large planning firm or architecture firm. So I'm blessed that I get to bring the public side of things, of financing and bond structuring and how you get projects done, as well as the private side of knowing how to put together a really cool report and tell a really good story.
From your website, it looks like you ensure to keep the historic authenticity of those towns represented as well.
Absolutely. So the character of the place is definitely defined by people, but it's also defined by the architecture as well. And so in certain communities, we're able to preserve the architecture, what people remember as being the heyday of the town, and revitalize those structures. And so, again, I'm fortunate to get to work with the Municipal Association of South Carolina, the Department of Commerce, History and Archives. How do we preserve those communities and the quality of life? But then how do we increase it? How do we make it so that it can thrive, not necessarily grow, but thrive?
For your District 9, what do you feel like the number one thing that people say the biggest issue is?
And my communication with potential constituents is all about the infrastructure of where's water going next, where's sewer going to be running to, because that's where growth occurs. But then how do we actually get our roads repaved? And so, again, I was blessed to serve 12 years as a local elected official, 8 as mayor. Again, was blessed to come after a great mayor who set up a lot of infrastructure projects for me, Mayor Peggy Paxton, so that I was able to build on top of those. And frankly, I know how infrastructure funds are distributed, how they're allocated based off of their source. I understand the state agency requirements, how to bring those funds back to the district. But the late Senator Billy O'Dell, he passed away just a few months after I came into office, but I was fortunate to get to work with him as a councilman and learn the ins and outs of who are the people to talk to, when do you talk to them, when's the right time to ask, because timelines are obviously important, how you leverage funds for C funds or DOT funds. Professionally, I work with USDOT, FHWA, and then SCDOT on their TAP funds or the Transportation Alternative Program. Again, it's about knowing all of those resources and how to package those together to complete a project. But infrastructure seems to be the major concern because it's tied to both quality of life, and we're all frankly tired of hitting potholes, but also tied to where the growth is going to go at.
And what do you think the biggest issue is statewide? From a bird's eye view, what do you think we as a state need to work on the most?
It could definitely go a lot of different directions. But statewide, I still believe that it is infrastructure related, but I also believe that it is tax related. From memory, we're like 27th in the country in our total taxing from property tax, sales tax, income tax, excise tax, tobacco, alcohol tax, you name it. We have found a way to tax it. I think greatly reducing that tax burden. And how do we do so and still keep our revenues enough so that we can continue to raise teacher pay and public safety pay and retain the residents that we want to retain in South Carolina?
Do you feel like we have done a good job as a state to attract the gray and white collar jobs as well? Or do you feel like there's an imbalance? Do you feel like you've done a good job up there?
Anderson County has done a really good job of supporting the manufacturing. And that has really turned in also to some biomedical manufacturing. My wife of 17 years works at Arthrex and is a product of both the Department of Commerce, the state, and Anderson County partnering together to bring in an out-of-state industry that I would consider a great collar job. But District 9 has some amazing small businesses. And I do believe that small businesses and locally owned businesses are the heartbeat of District 9, and frankly, the heartbeat of our smaller municipalities. And so if we can work to remove those unnecessary regulations or the hurdles for growth, we've got to continue to toe that line of supporting the blue collar manufacturing, but then also encouraging creation of the gray and white collar internal to some of those small businesses. I also think that we've got to continue to support Career and Technology Center. Anderson School District 1 and 2 has a phenomenal career center. I think ranked first in the state this year, second in the state last year, and our technical schools.
Blake, if we talk to your best high school friend, what would they tell us about you?
So my best high school friend, who I fished with every day in high school, who's now an attorney in Manhattan, he would be able to say this verbatim because I've been saying it for 10 years. He would say, Blake Sanders is a husband, a father, a landscape architect, a planner, a former mayor, and former professor at Clemson University, and you should choose him to be your representative for District 9.
Let's do the lightning round. So these are hot button issues from 1 to 10. If 1 is you disagree with the current or proposed legislation, or you fully agree with the current or proposed legislation. Let's see. How judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
So this would be a 1 because I don't think that there has been any action taken yet.
Okay. School vouchers for all.
Yep. So school vouchers for all. I'm going to throw that as a 7.
Medical marijuana.
Again, another bill that I do not think has passed, but one that continues to be in committee. Yep. I would support the medicinal use of medical marijuana appropriately prescribed by the doctor.
The heartbeat bill's 6-week abortion ban.
Fully supportive of this bill.
Constitutional carry.
Fully supportive of this bill.
Transgender care ban for minors.
Yes, that's a 10. It was just recently passed by Senator Cash, I believe. Thank you, Senator Cash.
Critical race theory or diversity, equity, inclusion being limited to how it's taught in schools.
So I'm supportive of the bill that currently has the majority of the support in the House.
And then this one is not a bill, but would you support term limits for state House and state Senate?
Yeah, you are correct. We currently do not have term limits in any of our respective offices, whether it's state or federal. Institutional knowledge is vitally important in certain circumstances, but I do believe that term limits should be considered as part of a new legislative action so that it teaches us how to transition to a new set of leaders.
Thank you so much, Blake, for being on Frogmore Stew. It's been really enjoyable talking to you, and we wish you luck.
I'm Caitlin Brewer, and today I am joined by Carrie Smith, who is running for the South Carolina House of Representatives in District 28. Carrie, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Caitlin. Excited to be here.
So District 28, talk to me about that. It's like south of Greenville and southwest of Simpsonville, right?
Our district is really interesting because it makes up areas of Piedmont, Pelzer, Malden, Simpsonville, Fountain Inn, and all the way down to the county lines. It is a very diverse district for Greenville County, for sure.
And the incumbent right now is Ashley Trentham.
And Ashley has decided to retire. We will be getting a new representative for our district this year.
And the Republican primary is packed because of it. You're one of 5 people running for that district. How do you feel about that?
It's exciting. Especially for voters, I believe that all of the candidates, we have very different backgrounds and perspectives on the issues facing our state. I think as a voter, it's a wonderful time because there are so many varied folks with varying backgrounds. And so that's why it's exciting to be able to do a podcast like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if your running mates in the Republican primary would be as generous about the positive nature of running against 4 other people. So talk to me. How do you differentiate yourself? What have you done in your world, in your life, to prepare for being a legislator?
First and foremost, this has never been a bucket list item for me. This was not something I was a kid and said, hey, I want to run for office. But my background is in credit unions. I've been in the credit union movement for 37 years. The majority of that time has been focused on economic development and building thriving communities. In my work, I'm the South Carolina Regional President for Self-Help Credit Union. And in my day-to-day job, I work with nonprofits, faith communities, cities, and municipalities in things like affordable housing, transportation. We work a lot with nonprofits and helping them build their resources to be able to serve their clients. So I see firsthand every day the struggles that our families are facing, things like transportation. We are at an equilibrium point in this state on auto ownership, things like fuel costs, and I can make a loan to somebody a very reasonable interest rate, and they can afford the monthly payment, but the insurance on that car many times is their monthly insurance bill is higher than their car payment. So we've got to look at transportation for people to be able to get to their jobs, or better paying jobs at that. The other thing that I really see on a day-to-day basis is how families are struggling with childcare. And if parents don't have a safe, reliable, and accessible place to take care of their children, they can't work, or they're limited by the options of the work that they can do. For me, over the last year, I saw things at the State House where a lot wasn't being done because there was a lot of dissension. And I want to focus on families. I want to focus on bringing more money back into the household budgets. I want to help prepare people for better paying jobs, and also to support our nonprofits and organizations that are really helping families to make it. But we have enough resources in our state that we shouldn't have to rely solely on the systems that we have in place today. And my strategic planning background, where I've worked with more than 50 board chairs around board tables, trying to solve hard problems in innovative ways to meet the needs of all the stakeholders. And that's the experience I want to take to Columbia.
Oof, managing a board, man. I've done that before too. That's a tough role. So would you then describe childcare as your district's biggest issue, or do you think there's something else that's the biggest issue in your district?
In Greenville County, there is a 17-month waiting list. And I don't know one human being that is pregnant for 17 months. So how do families make those choices? But some of the bigger issues that are, as I'm talking to voters, and I've talked to nearly 2,000 voters in the district, in one way or another. And what I'm finding, infrastructure and our roads are definitely the number one issue. Strategic planning and my background is helping organizations grow. So I think I bring unique talents to that particular issue. The second biggest thing that I'm hearing are things like our public safety. There is a lot of concern around, is our law enforcement being supported, especially around trafficking of fentanyl? I've met two families, one family that had a child that died of an overdose of fentanyl that they purchased over the internet. And then another family where their child has been severely health-wise diminished. I think about those families all the time because they're just two of many that are facing our families and our communities. Law enforcement is something that I want to make sure that they have the resources to tackle health and safety. Mental health is a big issue for law enforcement. And I want to make sure that all of those that are out there serving our communities have the resources they need.
So talk to me then about what of those issues in your district that you think translates to the biggest issue statewide.
I think education is an issue that our state needs to tackle because we fight for the bottom in upward mobility out of poverty in this country. And that is not something we should be proud of. Education is the key to success out of poverty. And I think that we need to think in more innovative ways to educate our kids, because not all children learn the same. My son, he struggled with a form of dyslexia. And at the time when he was going through school, they really didn't have the resources in the public schools that resonated with him and helped him be successful. Now he's a dad and working, but I see many families that are struggling with that. So I think we need to be more innovative, and we do need to think outside the box of how do we educate our children to meet the needs of the workforce. But also I want youngsters to feel like that they can become entrepreneurs as well, because small businesses are the lifeblood and the backbone of our economy. So we've got to start thinking more broadly and in more innovative ways to meet those needs.
Okay, you have all of the issues that you just talked about. You win the Republican primary, you win the general election, and you're off to the state house. What is the first policy you'd change immediately?
One of the things that I really would love to focus on is small business and how we can provide tax credits or other relief to small businesses, especially ones that are startups and maybe under 5 years. We do a lot of incentivizing large corporations to move to South Carolina or to expand their business in South Carolina. I would love to see us be as thoughtful and as intentional with our small businesses as well. I just see that there's two ways in life for people to build wealth, and that's homeownership and small business. When we have counties in this state that have over 33% poverty rate, we've got to figure out how we can help those communities be more productive. And small business is a way that we can build communities that thrive.
With that small business, though, back to infrastructure, clearly some of the roads up in the upstate are in dire need of repair, finishing, whatever. I think there's other infrastructure components, water, sewer, like affordable housing, that all go into supporting small businesses. How do you picture infrastructure as part of your platform?
You are so correct. I've lived in the district for 25 years in the same home. And I have seen over the last 5 years in particular, my water pressure has diminished. My broadband service is worse. My cell service is worse. Roads, I believe, are a huge deal. That is the biggest thing. They talk about the potholes and the not expanding roads or widening roads to accommodate large subdivisions. And in our district, we've gone from farmland to subdivisions. And while as a homeowner, that has been a huge benefit for me because my home has tripled in value, especially in the last 5 years. But for folks that are young families or people moving into the area, housing is a big issue. So we have to look at a more global, comprehensive approach to housing, because the further out we go in the sprawl, that just adds to our traffic. So how do we do that in a responsible way? That is something that I definitely want to work on, because it is not just the roads. It really is about all the other things and our schools. My husband works at the New Fountain Inn High School. It's only been open 3 years, but they've already outgrown their facility and they haven't even brought in the senior class yet. So they're already expanding that school. And to be fair, no one predicted COVID, which created this environment of remote work. We saw a lot of people move to South Carolina to take advantage of that. They did not enter our job force. They did put pressure on all the other infrastructure, the housing, the roads, the schools. And so to be fair to those that have been in leadership, I don't think they anticipated that kind of growth in that short a period of time.
Carrie, let's go to the lightning round. These are going to be some hot button issues that South Carolinians have heard a lot about in the last legislative session. And we're going to do a 1 to 10 scale. 1 is if you fully disagree, do not support it. 10 is if you fully agree, completely support it. And you can answer any number in between.
I think I got it.
Heartbeat bill or 6-week abortion ban?
I would say the 6-week abortion ban, I believe.
That you support.
Mm-hmm.
And school vouchers for all.
I take exceptions for all. I would probably be at a 5.
Open carry?
I am probably a 7 on that one, just because I work in a financial institution. But as far as the constitutional right to carry, I do support that.
What about transgender care ban for minors?
I would say definitely a 10 on that.
Teaching critical race theory in school?
I would be probably in the 7 range.
So you do agree with it?
For the most part.
Social emotional learning in schools?
I have not heard that one stated that way. Would you mind clarifying?
Yeah, of course. So social emotional learning is basically this idea that you apply empathy and feelings, and that you're teaching kids how to get through difficult situations. And it can be looked at as a positive because you're able to empathize with other people, or it could be looked at as a negative because you're teaching kids to be too emotional and they need to just buck up and get things done.
That one, I agree with that. I believe our children are facing issues that other generations have not had to face. And it goes back to COVID as well, because we had this period of isolation for kids. And I think that is going to be something that we deal with in adulthood, in our future workers, as well as today in school. So we need to equip our children with ways to cope with what they're feeling and how to build relationships and how do you solve conflicts in a positive manner.
What about term limits for state House and state Senate?
On that one, I'm probably a 5. I see both sides to that because experience does help, because it takes, in any business or anything, it takes a while to really learn the system and the way that it's governed. However, so many times people get complacent over time and lose their passion, or it becomes an autopilot. So I can see both sides of that.
What about diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives?
I really have seen the benefits. For me in particular, I'm one of 4 kids. And even though we all grew up in the same household, we still have very different perspectives on things. And I know I have a very diverse team of folks that work for me that bring opinions and ideas, and it makes for a better workplace for me. So I don't see those terms in the way that I'm sure that you may be asking. But me personally, I have seen the benefits of having a very diverse workforce and employees and folks that I work with. If it's about making it mandatory, as a private company, I don't believe that it should be mandatory. But if a company decides that it's in their best interest for their competitive edge and the folks that they serve and their key stakeholders, then I think that it could work well for them.
What about how judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
That's a mess. I'll just say that.
Okay, so you disagree.
Oh my goodness. One is, I don't think legislative lawyers or lawyer legislators should serve on that committee. The main reason that I believe it needs to be overhauled is because citizens have no trust in the system now. If they can't trust our judicial system, then there's a problem. So I believe that there's a lot of work to be done there. For our state, it is imperative that our citizens trust our judicial system.
So let's finish out then with one last question, which is, what do you want the average voter to know about you? What do you hope they take away from this conversation?
The biggest thing that I hope folks will take away is I have a collaborative nature. That's been my whole professional career, but that is how I do and work every day, whether as an individual or in positions of leadership. I am not the person that will take my ball and go home, because I feel like that you find common ground and then you work on solutions that meet the needs of the stakeholders that you're trying to serve. And I'm a servant leader. I have been working in credit unions, whether I'm serving credit union boards or I'm serving individuals at the credit union, or personally, if I'm organizing a car show to raise money for a nonprofit that I feel very passionate about. I am a roll up your sleeves and get to work kind of person. I'm not a lip service individual. And I believe in working hard for the people that need it the most. And probably the biggest thing, one of my biggest accomplishments, is I've been married for 40 years to the same man, and he was my high school sweetheart. I'm a mom and a grandmother, so families matter to me, and I see the struggles, and I want to help be part of the solutions for our families and our communities in South Carolina.
Carrie Smith, it has been such a pleasure to have you here today on Frogmore Stew.
The meal prep's got me all set. The meal prep's got me all set.
Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is a podcast series presented to help you be a more informed voter for South Carolina. We encourage you to verify your voter information and see a sample ballot for your district online at scvotes.gov. Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is hosted by Grace Cowan and Caitlin Brewer, with editing and IT support by Eric Johnson, produced by TJ Phillips for the Podcast Solutions Network.